Matters Radio Show. This session of the radio show shares my conversation with Health Director Kathleen Liberty on January 25, 2022. We had our conversation via virtual conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. We talked about it's a new year. Some things remain the same. Some things are new. Where we're at 2 years into COVID and the pandemic, the vaccine clinics, the kids survey for the families is open now. At-home kits are available, and reporting is going to get skewed because of that. We talk about Metacomet Regional with the nurse now on site and an epidemiologist now in the temporary office at the senior center, and another inspector helping with the health inspections around town. Recording runs about 35 minutes. So let's listen to my conversation with Kathleen. Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet at WFBR.FM and in the local Franklin, Mass. area FM dial at 102.9. Here in January, we're catching up with our health director, Kathleen Liberty. Kathy, how are you doing today?
Hello, I am doing well, thank you.
Oh, good. Because it's January, it's a new year. Some things are the same, some things are new, some things are just not seeming to go away.
I know. Who knew? Last January, I think we were looking towards a new year, you know, without COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the COVID variant plans changed.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, here we are going in our second year. Is it our second year?
Yeah.
I'm kind of tired of it, I'll be honest.
I don't blame you. I think everybody is.
Yeah. I think though, and you know, I like to always put a positive spin, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I really feel that, and I think I've said this before, that it's important for me to be a leader in the community in one capacity or another. And I feel that my skills were really utilized in helping people, businesses, people who were tested positive, employers who had employees and staff testing positive, and just talking it through, talking the process of isolation, quarantine. It never got old for me in that I wanted to help everybody. And I am always grateful when they say, thank you so much. I feel so much better now, you know, because there is a certain perspective that health directors have with this pandemic because we live it constantly. Right.
Yeah.
And so not every daycare operator has, you know, positive cases all the time. And, you know, so that if I had to put some positive on that, I would say that I'm grateful that I could be here for so many people, whether it be for, like I said, walking through isolation, quarantine, contact tracing, vaccine information, providing clinics, which we'll talk about next. Doing that for this community just meant a lot to me. And so I'm just grateful that I could offer my services.
Yeah, I think given certainly over the 2 years, there's been a whole lot of, you know, information change, and along with that, certainly some misinformation, as well as, I mean, science is science. It's always working towards a defined set of data, but the data, as we've seen, has been changing rapidly as we're in this worldwide pandemic. There's a lot going on. But yeah, really, to the extent that you've been able to, at least in your role, help us maintain that kind of, this is what is, this is where we're at,
right.
Let's sort through this other stuff. This is what we got. I think that certainly we welcome that. And I appreciate you taking the time to continue to offer this to the community because we do need it.
Thank you. Well, and the one thing that never subsided was the fear factor, the panic and the fear surrounding mm-hmm. this virus, with good reason. It never changed. And, you know, I have a couple employers that will just say, you know, I got two more cases, or I got four more cases, and, you know, the kind of like, whatever. But then I have the you know, mom who's 6 months old was exposed, and you know, the panic that arises with that, well, with good reason. Mm-hmm. So even myself, I had to, well, I didn't have to, but I opted to get tested a few weeks ago because I didn't feel well. That 20 minutes of just waiting for the phone call to tell me if I was positive, negative, there was, I had, didn't have panic. I had fear. Mm-hmm. Not fear of what, I'm not sure, but there's also a stigma that would come with a positive case for the health director, right?
You know? Right. Right.
I don't,
of
know,
all
I
people.
Of all people. And you know what, though? Another health director called me last week. I tested positive, and I didn't place any stigma on that. So that's me, right? Wanting to be, again, that leader and role model.
I think the fear certainly is inherent in the nature of the disease itself, because of its invisibility. I mean, we've talked, and I think we've used kind of the image of kind of like the pig pen person, you know, with this, you know, cloud of dust around him. If that was like a person that was shedding COVID, we could see it. We could, you know, move accordingly, get far away, et cetera. But to the extent that it is invisible, you don't know where it is. You don't know who's tested, who hasn't, who's vaccinated, who's not.
It's
indoor
an invisible
is war. Certainly much more at risk than outdoor. It's trying times.
It is. It's still trying times. And I don't think it's something that we get used to.
No. And then related to that, to the extent that, you know, you don't, those, all those other mitigation factors. So if somebody is already immune compromised, then they're at greater risk. And I've got actually a grandchild coming up on two. He's not eligible for a vaccine. So we have to be very careful to be our babysitter, to be the babysitter when time's needed. And we don't want to pick up from him. We don't want to give it to him.
There's been a lot of decision making for us in so many different ways over the past 2 years. You know, so many times, you know, you have to make decisions based on the severity of the virus. And that I think is what's tiring. Making, you know, like you just said, you know, if you wake up with a sore throat, you can't watch your grandchild, you know, because you don't know. And then there's that battle. And when should I get tested? And should I get tested? And who would I come in contact with? And it's a never ending battle in your own mind, you know? So it's just hard. And luckily I didn't test positive, by the way. So.
Oh, good.
But I just didn't feel good. Can you imagine?
I can, because, you know, I've had the sniffles here and there once in a while, and it's always like, well, this is the onset of something. I don't know.
Because
it's so close to the common cold anyway. So,
Well, this variant is very close to a common cold, and this symptom. So 95% of our cases in Massachusetts is this new variant, Omicron. And basically, the viral load is in the back of our throats, right? So that's where we end up having a sore throat or runny nose and very mild symptoms, versus the Delta that kind of clobbered us last year, right?
Yeah.
So I think 85% of our cases were Delta at that point. And that was a tough, very tough variant. Hopefully this new variant's losing steam, and hopefully we can have just a reprieve for a while. But I did read on the CDC that researchers are, you know, looking to see if there is going to be another variant.
There is, it's the nature of the virus. The virus is going to continue to breed and it's going to continue to morph and mutate, and hopefully the newest ones will be, if you will, somewhat less, you know, maybe more spreadable, but less severe. Who knows? I mean, take a turn for the worse. Who knows?
Well, I mean, and this isn't advertised a lot, but we do this every year with the flu.
Yes.
So there's different strains every year with the flu. And sometimes we get it right with the vaccines, and sometimes we don't cover all the strains. And, you know, so it's really just, there's a lot of moving parts.
There is.
And hope to get them right.
And it's good to bring up the flu piece, because that's one thing that I think, and I haven't seen the numbers, but to the extent that many of us were masked, I think there was less of an effect from the flu because, oh, by the way, we were preventing it by the protocols. And I've also been hearing too, you know, whether it's this company, that company is now working on incorporating the vaccine into kind of like a flu shot. So it would be, we would get kind of the one that would cover both flu and COVID as we go forward. But, you know,
one and done.
One and done, theoretically. There may still have to be more for somebody who's immune compromised or whatever. We'll see. I mean, this is a developing story for sure.
Sure. Yeah. Stay tuned. But, you know, we talk about vaccines and, you know, we have had our share of vaccine clinics. Just to recap, our largest one was for when the first responders came. The first responders were eligible for a vaccine. And we had the first clinic, multiple towns, and vaccinated close to 400 first responders, volunteers and staff. That was, a year ago, coming up.
Early in 2021, right?
No, January. It was actually a year. Yeah.
This January, month. February, 2021. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was, again, being a leader of the community, one of the leaders of the community, this was an amazing clinic. And it was with the help of four or five other towns now. I can't quite remember how many, but we pulled it off at the Franklin High School, and it was really a joy to see that this could actually take place, because for years and years we plan for these emergency dispensing sites and do tabletop, you know, workshops and things like that.
Right.
And we never really put it in place in a full scale mode. This was full scale mode, and it was successful. The first one was, the second dose was, it was crazy. It was just a wonderful experience during a bad time. But then we've also, you know, we also had a clinic for the seniors. We did a COVID clinic for the Housing Authority residents. We did a flu clinic for the seniors. And now we've scaled it down. So we do hold our clinics at the senior center versus the high school. So what does that mean? So I have two emergency dispensing sites. The major one would be the Franklin High School. The smaller scale would take place at the Franklin Senior Center. So we had a COVID clinic there as well. And we also we've had youth COVID clinics as well. So our first one that we held, we vaccinated 287 students. We had 300 doses. So it was a great experience, a bit chaotic. Mm-hmm. I'll put a plug in for all my volunteer vaccinators. And it was just great. We worked with Rentham, with their nurses, and Dr. Daddario, and volunteers of the Medical Reserve Corps. It was just, it was wild having 287 families come in.
Mm-hmm.
Children are responding in all different ways to getting the vaccine. But what my experience is they come in okay, and they come in, they register, and then they hear a child screaming and fighting, you know, that, and that will kind of override anything mom and dad said.
You know? We were talking about fear. When you hear somebody yelling and screaming, then it's like, well, what's going on?
Right. Why are they screaming? So that can kind of shake some children up. We actually had Ben Franklin, Jamie, the officer that mm-hmm. that takes care of Ben halftime, he was kind enough to bring him to our first clinic. And so Ben was very helpful. We put aside a room for those children that were really really looking anxious and exhibiting, you know, anxiety, you know, visibly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we had a separate room. The parents really appreciated that. And Ben would go in there and kind of, you know, hopefully help the children ease their anxiety. So that was a huge benefit. Lots of pops. You know, we put all kinds of toys on the tables for the waiting room. And mm-hmm. so it was real success. I have to give a plug for my public health nurse, which I'll talk about a little later on, but she really put that into play. And then we had a second clinic for the second dose. Same thing, chaotic, crazy, fun, you know, but worked. We had a smaller one. We had a 30 dose one a couple weeks ago, and that went beautifully, smooth as silk. And then we held another one last Wednesday at the senior center, where we did not get a good turnout. So we had 150 doses and we only vaccinated 58 youth.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's, I don't know the answer to why.
And it's interesting because, Chloe, you didn't get as many registrations. So does that say people who wanted to have been, and thereby those who are left are choosing not to? I mean, it's open to speculation there. So we won't go down that rat hole at this point.
It is. But what we did, we initially had 80 people signed up and then only 58 show. Mm. But if you look at our numbers, so as of January 11th, only 6% of the 9% of the 5 to 11 year olds have been vaccinated. It's really low percentage for 12 to 15, 16 to 19, 20 to 29, 30 to 49. So we had to really change that. Mm-hmm. And I am in just the talking stages with my public health nurse and epidemiologist and other towns. Met this morning talking about how do we, you know, what are the barriers and how do we bring them down and vaccinate more people?
Yeah, and related to that, you've got a survey that just came out, I think, in regards to going to the parents and checking on the kids' status in terms of, as I understand it, having looked at a couple of questions, although since I don't have kids, I didn't fill out the survey, but at least to be aware of it, I shared it so that the Franklin community can get at it. But yeah, it's really kind of assessing the pandemic's effect on the kids, I think, is what I was determining.
Yeah. So how that came about was I take in interns from Worcester State University every semester. And the intern is usually doing a practicum for their public health degree, health education degree. And so they have to do a community assessment. Mm-hmm. They have to figure out what's going on in the community that they're doing the internship in order to either hypothetically or do to promote a particular program. So what does this look like? So I thought we had the clinic last Wednesday. And so right there and then we have a target population of 5 to 11. Okay. So that's easy. So that's already fleshed out. So what's going on in this age group that we should know about? And so that's how the survey came about. It was developed by the intern and myself. Very easy, layman terms, but there are, you know, so we'd like to know does this target population have issues sleeping, eating, too much screen time, you know, what does this mean, right? And ultimately put it all together, see what's the dominant factor here, and how do we go about basically getting the message out to parents and the residents, you know, that this looks like it's a problem, and here's what we think you can do to remedy it. Mm-hmm. But stay tuned, because it just went out yesterday, and the intern was at the clinic and she did give the survey to 58 parents and they all filled it out willingly. So we have a lead on it right now. You know, but what we want to really look at too is, you know, screen time can be a problem for the eyesight. And I don't think a lot of people know that. And, you know, it's definitely over usage just in general, but I would imagine during the pandemic that screen time would have increased. And so what does that mean? Right. And I think they all kind of work together, because screen time can, too much screen time can interrupt your sleep. Right. And so it's also you're not paying attention to what you're eating because you're on that screen time. You know, just so all these factors kind of tie in together. So, but anyhow, stay tuned. We'll figure that out next time.
So that sounds good. And the other recent development, I think you've ordered some at-home kits. Certainly the federal government has enabled that ordering of as well, but you'll have some available?
Yeah, I ordered them 2 weeks ago. And of course, there's a backlog. So apologies to the residents who have called. We were hoping to have them in last week. But the vendor is having trouble with shipping. So hopefully we'll have them soon.
Yeah, once they do arrive, you can put out a notification. We'll help share that. And let folks know.
Yeah, but we have to figure out how many per family, things like that.
Allocation, yep.
Since yeah.
Between timing and overall availability.
And now that you can sign up for them, and health insurance companies are going to reimburse up to, I think, so many kits, don't quote me, you know, more people are apt to do that. So I think that that will kind of draw people away from wanting more from the health department.
Yeah, I think the overall supply stream should start improving. And to the extent that it does, they'll be more available. And hopefully they'll be less needed as we go forward. Who knows? But
I have mixed feelings about at-home kits. I think that they're important to families who may be going with other families, or, you know, birthday parties or whatever it may be, to make sure to keep other people protected. I just wish there was still an advisory that says, you know, if you tested positive, get a PCR. So these at-home kits are antigen kits. And although reliable, the PCR is still the gold standard. But a PCR has to be obtained, right, at you know, a testing site or a lab or CVS, wherever you go. And then that case is then funneled into our DPH software system. And that's when we get notified of a positive case in Franklin. Without that, we're not going to know how many positive cases we have. So right off the top, you know, when we put out information on the dashboard we're working on, I can't say that this is an accurate count. And that's disheartening.
Yeah, I think there's two pieces in there from my understanding and reading, that one, the test kit can be utilized within a time period, right? So there's certainly, if you were exposed yesterday, don't use the kit today. Wait, I think it's 3 to 5 days before using the kit.
Yeah.
And then if you've got a result, then you can come back still another couple of days. That's why the kits generally ship in twos, because they should be used in sequence. But then the other point clearly is in regards to the skewing of the data, because the test kits don't automatically kind of phone home to the data to say, oops, there's a negative here, there's a negative here, there's a positive here. You don't really know what data is out there other than, you know, what you're getting.
Well, and that's a, you know, it can be a problem, because, you know, we look at our positive cases on a daily base, and yes, it's going to help with, you know, kind of reduce the contact tracing, right, which is definitely going to free up time for the contact tracing volunteers and the public health nurse. and we can start, you know, utilizing the public health nurse for things that she should be utilized for versus contact tracing all day long. You know, we had, you know, and what's this going to look like next year? So last year, we could compare last January to December, January to this, right, December, January numbers. You know, we had 1,129 cases in 2 weeks, the end of December, beginning of January. Those are solid cases, right? Next year, I can't even compare. I can't. So, because it won't be accurate now that we have these at-home kits. So I see the benefit in them for sure. But as a numbers person, I also see that, you know, the numbers are now skewed.
But we've talked towards a couple of things, so let's kind of circle back. You've got this Metacomet regional or shared services as well now, and the the town has a nurse, which we had not had before, although we had contracted with nursing services. But now we have our own nurse, which allows you to do a bunch of things we've talked to and you can get, talk more about. But we also have an epidemiologist. So talk more about those, because both of those are now officed at the senior center.
Yes, they are. So we have a public health nurse. She is from a hospital. She's a clinical nurse. She's been with us since October, and she is transitioning nicely to public health, which is definitely different than clinical nursing. She has already, besides, let's put COVID aside, right, because she's worked her tail off with COVID. You know, that's that aside, you know, she's partnered with the housing authority, and, you know, is doing blood pressure and glucose testing at least once a month. We haven't come up with a regular schedule yet, but that's something that I really wanted her to do, is to be part of a community. You know, so that started last week, and I think she's going next week, which is great. So she's still working into that. You know, she's great. The small things that you don't think about, but she going to every municipal building and checking their defibrillator to make sure that they have batteries.
The ones on the walls in the different rooms and stuff. Yeah.
She wants to start doing stop the bleed training, CPR training. So we have a lot on the agenda for her to roll out now that the cases are down and she has, you know, help with the epidemiologist and the contact tracing volunteer. So she can start performing those duties and getting out in the community and making a difference.
And then also through the shared services, you now have an inspector.
Oh, yes, we do. We have a regional inspector. So the shared service grant is with Rentham and Norfolk and Franklin. Rentham has, back to the nurse, Rentham has 2.5 nurses, but we're still helping each other, right? So Franklin, Rentham, and Norfolk, you know, we assist with clinics and all of that. So that's definitely still regionalized, even though she's housed here. We have a regional inspector. And so what does that mean? So that means this person actually has taken over all inspections for food establishments, housing complaints, nuisance complaints. So he is just a huge asset to all three towns. Mm-hmm. And we're really thrilled to have him for many, many years, we're hoping.
Hopefully, because if I recall the last time I saw the stats, we had over 100 food establishments. And even if you're going to get those, I think twice a year, well, that's 200 visits. That's a lot of time.
Yeah. And plus, you know, we open up businesses too, permit businesses, you know, those type of the food establishments, and you'd be surprised of how many complaints we get that we have to do our due diligence,
right?
Whether we find there's reason for it or not, we still have to go out. Yeah. So this is taking a load off of the health department responsibilities and again, letting us do different things as well. So it's been a real asset to all three of our towns.
Back to the rest of the non-COVID business that the health department you're supposed to be doing.
go figure. I mean, it's so interesting because for example, we, being the fire department, building commissioner, and the health department and police, we've created, it's called Habitable Housing Group or Task Force, if you will. And so what does that mean, right? So there are some homes, some abandoned properties in the town of Franklin, some that have burned, you know, and have just been left. And what we do is we work with the Attorney General's office on their abandoned housing initiative. And so we actually went out and we have three properties. We go out and do a full inspection with the Assistant Attorney General. And we, you know, cite the state sanitary code violations. We send up what's called an order to correct to the owner. And it ultimately could eventually lead to housing court. But the goal of the task force committee is to get these properties, get the violations abated, get the properties up to minimum standards, so they're not a blight in the town of Franklin. Mm-hmm. So yeah. That's what I mean when I say we get back to what the health department is supposed to do.
Yeah, while you're behind the scenes, clearly COVID brought you to the forefront, but a lot of other things you generally do are indeed behind the scenes. And yet from time to time, they do, you know, they clearly affect our overall health. And we appreciate that because we need that. But yeah, it also requires coordination with other departments like the building inspector, police and fire, et cetera. So yeah.
And that's really good for me because if you think about it, when I started in December 2019, you know, I didn't have much time to network with my colleagues in other departments. We went head on into COVID and I didn't have time to build relationships and you know, they really, other departments don't know exactly what you do until you're asked. Right. And so that's how this all came about. We had one problem property and fire, police and building were like, oh, OK, so you can assist us. And absolutely. Because the Board of Health is a very powerful board. So when you get a letter from the Board of Health, you can't ignore it. And so I'm pleased to be working with my colleagues now and doing what I'm you know, should be doing. Right. Besides COVID. But of course, COVID. You know, we're also in charge of, you know, this type of emerging disease or virus, but it's just more the governor's, in the beginning, the governor really placed a lot of responsibility on the, I love saying it, Steve, you know, the local boards of health, which means me.
Yes. Yeah.
Well,
we won't get into that other political discussion around what he could have or should have done. But yeah.
Oh no, it's all due respect. I mean, it's all due respect. I just always laugh at the you know, I don't know, the way he said it was not the way it was intended. I'm sure. So.
Well, and I think as we've talked here, and I've talked with Jamie, and people are aware, clearly Franklin has lived within its budget, but is also, because of COVID, recognized that there are some budget deficits, and one of them is in the health department arena, clearly in terms of the response. So now with the Medicomet and the grants and the regionalization, et cetera, you're starting to build kind of towards the staff, and we're a city size, you know, with 33,000 folks, and yet we didn't have a nurse. I mean, that didn't make a whole lot of sense, and it came up during COVID because that was one of the reasons why you couldn't do a clinic because you didn't have somebody that could actually have the authorization to request the vials, etc. So now you've got that. Now we have that, and now we can start doing, oh, by the way, COVID, and then everything else you're supposed to do.
So. Yeah, it's very exciting. And that brings me to the epidemiologist. So she just started a few weeks ago. She's straight out of college, a great fit. She jumped right in. She started a COVID-19 dashboard, kind of unlike anything we've seen yet. Based on the data that we get from the municipal data that we get from DPH. So that is for, we actually have a Medicomet website, webpage. Mm-hmm. So that's for all three towns. And it's really, really great, great information. So she's just dove right into that. She'll also be in charge of distributing the at-home kits when they come in. And we'll be utilizing her for a lot of different data reporting, I guess you might say, is her primary role to keep track of that and you know, get us the information that the town administrator would like to see, a public health nurse would like to see, the other towns would like to see. So very, very excited to have her and just to look forward to see what else we can come up with as far as COVID goes. But, you know, I want to look at other things too, because
COVID and non-COVID, absolutely.
COVID and non-COVID, you know, like I was just reading the CDC food safety awareness. I think this is like their awareness month or something to that effect. And, you know, there's still, and I've said this to you numerous times, there's still salmonella and there's still campylobacter, and this norovirus will be on the rise coming soon. And that's a foodborne illness. And
E. coli comes up from time to time.
E. coli comes up from time to time, especially with lettuce. I was thinking of salmonella with the chickens. Mm-hmm. No, I'm talking about like the flocks. Like there's a lot of problems with salmonella.
I think we've talked about that in one of our episodes with the home flocks, chickens mm-hmm. that become pets. And you got to be careful where you're crossing those lines. Yes.
Right. But you know, that's the data that you want to get because, you know, we're here for the community. And so, you know, we want to make sure that they have a good understanding of these communicable diseases, right? Because they're communicable and you can give it to your daughter and your grandchild or whatever if you have it and you're not aware. So that also, there will also be data about those type of communicable diseases as well and available for the community to see.
Yeah. Well, thank you for taking time today to share this amongst the multiple topics that we've had in this, 30 minutes or so. I appreciate that. And I'm sure the residents will as well as they listen to this. And then if they have additional questions, they can certainly reach out to you through the town website, your names and phone numbers, et cetera, there. And you can continue the conversation and then allay some of their fears, as we talked about. You know.
Yeah, they can call anytime.
Well, thank you again.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And we do this because Franklin matters.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.